Welcome to episode 60 of the Golf Talk Podcast at thesandtrap.com. My name is Jeff Smith, and joining me this week, flying solo alongside myself, is Jack, the Jack Attack. Hey, Jack, how you doing?
Good. I'm good. This is Jack Waddell from New Jersey, and I have an attitude this week. You better believe it.
You mentioned something about some gin, so maybe you'll have to elaborate on that a little later. Well, it looks as though Paula Creamer might have had a sip of that stuff May 27th, when she fell apart in her final round. She actually finished with a 71, so you might not call that falling apart, but she's only won 2 of 5, approximately like 2 of 5 events. She's had the lead going into the last round. Did you have a chance to look at that, Jack?
Well, I did briefly, but I got to tell you, you know, we really miss Eric tonight. And I have to tell you, you know, Eric is down with some sort of throat laryngitis, tonsillitis, whole thing, and he can't talk. I mean, but if he were here, he would say, I'm sure, that pink doesn't make up for a lot of stuff. You know, there's a big difference between hype and performance. And Paula Creamer, I think she's a great player and everything else, but maybe she's one of those people that's a little overhyped for what she really can perform to do.
Yeah, I just wonder if there's, you know, a player towards the top of the women's ranking who is able to close things out in the final round. We're just kind of lacking someone who can get that job done.
You know, there's a great difference in women's golf, and I think it shows up in the, and not so much in the talent, but in the depth of the play. And even at the very top, outside of perhaps Annika Sörenstam, you know, I don't see a lot of players with the killer instinct like a Tiger Woods. I think that showed up.
Yep. Well, another player that had a similar result last weekend was Lorena Ochoa, a gal named Castrale.
Well, here in Jersey, I think we'd say Castrale.
Well, Castrale chased Ochoa down. Of course, Ochoa choked with a couple of late bogeys in her round. And I guess the question is, with Ochoa, is she going to be able to win a major or even close out some more of these regular tour events the way that she's playing down the stretch?
We have to wonder, because I think, you know, and as Eric, who is monitoring our podcast tonight via iChat, is telling me, Ochoa is clearly lacking the killer instinct. And that killer instinct that was, you know, seen in people like Nicklaus and certainly Sörenstam and other great champions, you know, Ochoa hasn't really shown that yet. I think her loss this past weekend is yet another marker against her. She's a great golfer, obviously. But does she have that killer instinct? I'm not so sure.
You kind of throw, before Sörenstam kind of fell off of her pedestal, I think Ochoa was becoming the best of the rest. And I think behind what once was Sörenstam, you know, the unbeatable Sörenstam, Ochoa is just about the best of the rest. And unfortunately, we're not seeing a player in this field, as you say, you know, step on someone's throat, you know, take the bull by the horns, get out there and just finish out a round. So what do you who would you rank number one?
On the women's tour? Well, I think you'd have to say, I still think you have to say Ochoa, because even if she doesn't have the killer instinct, she's competing and contending every week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Ochoa obviously is the best. Time is going to tell whether or not Sörenstam is going to kind of recapture the magic that she had. Maybe she gets over an injury. And so we'll have to see about that. We got to see Rory the Mouth Sabatini actually snag a win, and he's probably feeling a little bit better. In fact, he said that he feels like he got the jinx off, and I think he must have been referring to mouthing off and then actually being able to win. So what do you think here, Jack? This is a big story. The Mouth kind of speaks up with his clubs. Is he able to kind of get this monkey off his back now and get on and challenge Tiger?
There's that expression, what, you can talk the talk and walk the walk. Well, he walked the walk that week at Colonial, I think. What can I say? He's definitely not a very appealing guy. I mean, he's to say the least, right? I mean, he's pretty darn obnoxious. But he won. And, you know, he's making the talk against Tiger, which I think Tiger's comeback trumps whatever Sabatini said. But at the same time, he won at Colonial. Good for him.
Yeah, well, you know, Eric made the point, I think it's a good one, that Jim Furyk really was one of the only major players there. I mean, he was up against Bernard Langer, who had a real chance at finishing it out. And for me, I think that this win says that Sabatini is good. It obviously obviously validates his great play this season. Now, Sabatini's been playing very well. But as I said last time we met, I think that Sabatini is a little more bark than he is bite. And he's going to need to prove his worth with his clubs if he's going to make a real charge and validate that win. Well, we're moving right along now to KJ Choi. Sabatini might have a loud mouth, but KJ has a loud club. And so we're going to talk a little bit about KJ. This is a weekend in which Adam Scott failed to get things done. After his 62, he admitted to kind of thinking ahead to a 59. He missed some short putts, especially a 6.5-footer for eagle. And so do we have in Adam Scott a kind of a weak mind here? Is this a real theme we're looking at this week?
Oh, I think it is a real theme. I think the theme is promise unfulfilled. I think we saw that in Kramer. I think we saw that in Adam Scott. I think we're seeing that, and we'll revisit this in other issues later in the podcast, but, you know, Scott just didn't get it done. Nor did Pampling, for that matter. I think Pampling's play over the last few holes was really tragic. And I think that, I don't want to say KJ Choi backed into it. That last putt he made on the last hole was, you know, the TV called it a 3-footer. It was more like a 5-footer. That was clutch. And he deserved to win, and I was happy for him. At the same time, I think you've got to wonder, you know, what kind of champions is the Memorial Tournament producing? Here we have KJ Choi on top of other assorted, you know, mid-level kind of pros who are winning the event. Does it deserve to be in the upper echelon of the PGA Tour of events?
Yeah, well, I thought it was a great win for KJ. Obviously, Jack Nicklaus has been one of his heroes, so to win at the Memorial was an outstanding win for KJ. You know, he put that smile on, was real happy, and give him credit. Have a look at the article that we're going to link to, and I think you're going to enjoy seeing the joy that he had about winning if you didn't see that tournament. Now, we also, you know, during this tournament, we saw a lot of Tiger. Tiger was not in there. Again, you kind of see perhaps CBS trying to cash in on Tiger Woods, the player. And hey, you know, I think we should be, my thought is that we should be honing in on the people who are playing well and are in contention. Any thoughts there, Jack?
Well, you know, Eric was there at the Memorial and followed Tiger. And the impression I got from him and was Tiger was just kind of not necessarily mailing it in, but he was definitely in practice mode. He was not, you know what I mean? He was not contending, which is very unusual for him, I think. I mean, he's always trying to win. Yeah. But I think he was hitting fades on holes where, you know, he had demonstrated he couldn't hit a fade, but he was trying to do so. And he's got, you know, the U.S. Open in 2 weeks on his mind.
And maybe a little bit of a slap in the face of Jack Nicklaus when he doesn't take his tournament seriously. But we'll have to see about that. We're going to be right back after this advertisement.
I'm working on posting more red numbers.
I'm working on the fundamentals.
Firing right at the target.
Winning my first major.
Pulling out.
Winning in my hometown, Augusta, Georgia.
Being a winner and a mom.
Working on my pivot.
My short game.
Going lower.
I'm just working on sticking to my game plan.
Ball position and alignment.
What I'm going to wear tomorrow.
Nice shirt.
I'm just trying to get better every day.
Even the world's best want to be better. That's why there's the new Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
Welcome back. We're going to be skipping our forum topic of the week and jumping right into a big story. Michelle Wee was back on the golf course competing, and we saw some very, very interesting things this weekend. She pulls out with an apparent wrist injury, was the public story. Basically, BJ was in there talking to the caddy. There was some question of whether he was given advice. The LPGA were wondering what their involvement might have been. And basically, they say, we're not going to play anymore. That's it. This, to me, is more of the same of what we've seen already out of Michelle Wee, and a very, very disappointing outing for her.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that it was kind of maybe the turning point for me. Last year, when I watched her try and qualify for the U.S. Open, I kind of gave her the benefit of the doubt. I think that, as did Eric, he was an extremely talented young player. This year, boy, she's just looking like a controlling father is running the whole thing. I'm very disappointed.
Well, it was very disappointing. Now, Wii's playing companion, Lena Sharp, said that she felt that Wii was pulling out to avoid shooting 88. Now, this is really kind of at the heart of this story this week, that if she was to shoot an 88, she would be prevented from playing anymore on the LPGA Tour. Now, you know, the question we might ask is, what does this say to a gal named Mackenzie Klein, who shot rounds of 86 and 89? This was the gal with the heart defect, 15-year-old, and she shot a 14 over. So she's obviously never shot that much, even on the PGA Tour. My question is her wrist injury that bad? And is she going to be able to play the McDonald's this year? So some real big questions there. Obviously, one of the major things is decision-making surrounding the family. I'm remembering Eric made a comment that, Michelle, we may be out of golf within 5 to 10 years. And I would kind of tend to agree. If we see this controlling family situation continue, we may see Michelle Wee out of golf before it's necessary.
Well, you know, I think the question is, you know, there are numerous questions here. How much was the LPGA involved in suggesting that she withdraw? How much was her agent involved in suggesting she withdraw? How much were her parents when she said, we aren't going to play anymore, using the plural we? You know, whom did she mean? Was that her parents? Was that the LPGA? Was that her agent? Who was that? You know, it would be, in her position, it would be stupid not to withdraw. I agree with one of our responders on the forum who said, hey, you know, if there's the rule of 88, if you shoot 88, you can't go on anymore. She would be stupid not to if she was in danger of shooting 88, and she clearly was.
Yeah, so, well, this puts her in the position of a person like John Daly, and I don't really have a ton of good feelings for him now. He's pulling out for all kinds of reasons. You know, I think that it shows a lack of dedication on her part.
Well, I do, and I think, you know, I think the idea that she could be another Jennifer Capriati is looking more and more likely. But, but her father, the father thing, could he be another Mac O'Hare? Well, he's certainly showing himself to be one.
Yeah, more than an Earl Woods, and we're seeing in him a controlling father, a man who's got to be there during her rounds. I think the best thing for BJ to do would be to step away and say, hey, listen, I have given her everything she needs to be a great competitor. I've supported her. I'm going to step away. I'm going to let her swing coach. She's got a fabulous swing coach in David Ledbetter. She's got a good solid caddy that I'm sure that they'll fire soon for some odd reason. I agree with one of the readers who said, if it were my child at this point, in order to save her career, I would just sit down and apologize for going about this all wrong. And I think that I think he makes a good point there, that what BJ needs to do is step away and realize this girl is only 17 years old. Just let her play the game, let her enjoy it, and let her find her own sea legs out there.
Let Michelle Wee be Michelle Wee.
Yeah, exactly. Let Michelle Wee be Michelle Wee. We're going to step away and go to our second advertising moment, so we'll be right back.
I'm working on shortening my swing.
Holding up more trophies.
Making the next Ryder Cup team.
Posting more low numbers.
Making everything I look at.
Getting the club more in line at the top.
Drawing the ball.
Working on my pivot.
Being more consistent.
More wins.
More wins.
More wins.
More wins.
More majors.
Just trying to get better.
Working on beating this guy.
Working on a whole lot of things.
Even the world's best want to be better. That's why there's the new Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
Welcome back in our Beating Balls section this week. We're going to jump into the Phil withdrawal symptoms at the Memorial. He has a wrist injury, something that he was suffering with. He had a physical therapist walking along with him, and so Phil pulls out of the Memorial. He was 2 over when he pulled out of the first round, and that was all we saw of him. This obviously interrupts his normal pre-major schedule of playing the week before, so I'm not sure if we have much more to say about this.
Apparently he got it trying, you know, hitting shots out of the rough in practice, and it could hurt. It's his left wrist, which would be the equivalent of a right wrist and a right-handed golfer, and that can be pretty painful. You know, the funny thing about the whole Memorial is that, as we talked about earlier with Tiger Woods, you know, playing more practice rounds than competitive rounds in the Memorial, seemingly according to Eric, I think, Phil was clearly looking 2 weeks ahead to the Open and how anything that hurt himself could affect that.
Yeah, he's obviously with a wrist injury. The big question is he going to be able to play aggressive? That's kind of how he does things. Is he going to be able to go after the ball hard if he's got to get at it in the rough? And obviously this does put a big question mark on his chances. We just had Johnny Miller say that, you know, Phil was his favorite even over Tiger. So, you know, it's looking like Johnny Miller might have to revise his endorsement here as we look at an injured Mickelson. So,
well, I'll tell you what, as our faithful readers will read later on, probably next week, I'm picking Phil for the U.S. Open. You know, yes, this injury could be a mental thing. Yes, it could have, you know, when push comes to shove and he finds himself in the rough, as he will often at Oakmont, will he play a different kind of shot? Will he flinch when he hits out of that rough? Maybe. Maybe not. I don't think that's going to matter so much as what's going to happen around the greens. I think Phil is still a magician around the greens. Wrist strength doesn't count there. And I think giving himself a week off isn't going to hurt his chances at the U.S. Open.
All right. Well, we're not sure Phil's overrated for the upcoming U.S. Open, but we do know that SI has given their label of overrated to 10 golf courses in America, some of them which might surprise you. The first, the 10th, it's one of 10, all right, is Augusta National. And for me, this is a perfect pick for overrated courses. I think that the way that they have totally torn this course up and made it something completely different is right on target. And I think it's unfortunate what they've done to Augusta National. Anything you see there?
Well, I think on the one hand, I have to agree. I certainly agree with Augusta National. And when I looked on the list of courses, you know, Medina number 3, Pebble Beach is way up there. At Torrey Pines, I can get it. I have a couple things trouble me. One is that it wasn't a byline story. I don't know who wrote this stuff. Two, you know, a course is what you make it. And Pebble Beach, I think, was the second or first worst, highest rated course, overrated course, whatever they wanted to call it. But the course is what you make it. And I got to tell you something. I have not played Pebble Beach. And were I to, it would not be one of the most overrated courses in the world. It would be the thrill of a lifetime. And you can be as cynical and snarky as you want, but all of the courses in this list, save a few, I'm not quite sure deserve to be in that kind of a list, just because of the history that goes behind them.
Yeah, well, someone might ask, well, who ranks Torrey Pines that high at all? We're not sure of that. I ranked Spyglass over Pebble Beach higher than Pebble Beach a few weeks ago in a trap five. So yeah, there's some good points there. Sahali is one that they pick. So there's quite a few.
Well, in my own personal list of overrated courses, I think that St. Andrews, the old course of St. Andrews, could be right up there. But at the same time, you play that, and it's as I said before, it's a thrill of a lifetime.
Yeah, well, that's it, and it's for a lot of us, it's a sentimental pick. So moving into our final story this week, we're taking a look at the LPGA, who are launching a tough drugs policy. Now, again, they're taking the lead, some of these important news items, and so they're instituting a pretty hard suspension. Basically, first-time offense is 25 tournament suspension. A second offense is a 50 tournament suspension, and a player who tests positive for the third time would be banned from the tour for life. So we're seeing a tough stance. We called for drug testing on the PGA Tour, and here the LPGA is doing that.
Carol Bivens, who cares? I mean, who really gives a flying whatever? You know what I mean? It's wonderful you've taken the lead in drug testing. I think it's very important. But at the same time, it has got to be such a small actual problem that I think this is someone trying to, you know, take the initiative to promote the brand and promote brand awareness and call attention to themselves, and God bless her.
Kelly Keeney, who has been on the tour since 98, says, boy, this is harsh. Is it too harsh? And my statement to Kelly Keeney would be, no, it's not too harsh. Obviously, if someone tests positive for drugs, it's a serious thing. Eric makes a good point that you know, if he was taking steroids as he's doing to try to get over his malaise, his difficulty, he might be kicked off the tour. So they're going to have to be very, very thoughtful and careful with this as they move ahead. But I think it's a good point. Jack, you disagree. And hey, as a listener, we encourage you to stop by our forum at thesandtrap.com/forum. Check that out and become a member if you're not already. And so we thank you for listening. And for Jack, my name is Jeff, signing off for this week, episode 60 of the Golf Talk Podcast.
And let's have one final shout out to Eric, who's taking prednisone and would probably be banned for at least 25 LPGA tournaments.
Okay, so, sounds good. We'll see you next week.